Hello, my name is Dan Brown, and I'm here today again with another A Lens a Day Conversations about Information Architecture. And today, it is my great pleasure to talk to the tremendous Sarah Rose. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So I've been talking to folks about how they do information architecture. And one of the things that I personally love about the practice of IA is that it feels like it's one of those things that, yes, you need to involve a lot of people. You want to have a lot of voices in the process. You want to collaborate. You want to draw people in. But there are some aspects of it that you need to just sit and think about. And I feel like there's a lot of maybe tools, I don't know if heuristics is the right word, but things that we do when we're processing the information that we've taken in as we're doing and producing information architecture artifacts, outputs. What are some of those things that you do when you're sitting and reflecting on the work?
Right. So a big part of the work I do is talking to the actual users or observing them as much as possible. So on my own, I review notes I've taken during those interviews and diagram things. So, part of the job isn't just the delivery of the product, it's bringing the team along who will create this product. So there's a lot of kind of prep work just to have the discussion about what we may want to move forward with in terms of actual delivery, right? And diagramming that problem out and having a vocabulary. And you know, it's funny how often people will say, well, I'm a visual person. Like maybe everybody else gets it, but I'm a visual person. Everybody is a visual person. So being able to map it out and begin to make something which is very, you know, kind of in your head, tangible. And I like doing the first draft on pen and paper, so I don't get too hung up in whatever software I'm using or formatting and infinite color options and so on, just to kind of have that clarity in my own mind before I invite others into that discussion.
So you kind of, as you're sort of processing everything that you've heard, after you've reviewed your notes, you start drawing pictures. And it sounds like you draw pictures of the problem, right? You're trying to sort of characterize the problem. Did I get that right?
Yes, I'm obsessed with problems, finding the best problems.
What does that look like on paper?
I guess it really depends on the problem. So it might be like yesterday I was trying to swim lane something because we have a problem and we have a solution in mind. Well, not even a solution. There's a process, and that process crosses several groups within the organization, right? That kind of horizontal, like mapping out that loop across these different teams, what each team might be delivering to address this process, right? Because our customers are having experiences that have nothing to do with how we're structured as an organization. So telling that story to colleagues and helping them see both their specific deliverable, but how that fits into an overall experience that a human being will have with our brand.
Swim lanes is one of those things that's like, I mean, I think people see it as kind of a format for how we create diagrams or a format for diagrams. And you're framing it as a tool that you've sort of pulled out of your toolbox. Like, okay, I'm going to use swim lanes as the means by which I am making sense of this problem. Would you agree with that interpretation?
Yes.
Do you have other sort of like go-to tools that you use to pull out of the toolbox that say, okay, I'm going to use this framework now to try and make sense of the problem?
I have done a lot of work with personas. I think At one point, I thought, well, if I can really represent the person who doesn't get to be in this room having this conversation about what technology we're going to invest in, it will help the team come around to see it that way. I'm not sure that's, I'm kind of losing faith that it could be that simple. Because I think there's a lot that happens between understanding, like between, you know, for me, a persona almost defines a problem. But that's a leap that goes on in my brain that it takes a long time to bring the team along with, right? I don't know.
I like that framing. I mean, personas are sort of, ironically, persona non grata, right? Like there's a lot of, let's call them, strong opinions about personas and their use in user experience these days. But I like how you framed it. Like a persona is just a means by which we define a problem. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that in your ideal world.
Yeah. How does persona work? Yeah. And personas mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So for me, you know, if for example, a project I did many years ago for National Eye Institute, I actually got to go in the field and watch people interact with the website at their station and how everything was set up. And it was very humbling to see how blown out the design is. You know, they're not working in the way that we would expect to this specific resolution or set of equipment. So being able to bring those details back to the team frames up a problem that we need a responsive design. We need to allow people to really blow out text to what we may feel is unreasonable size, right? Like designers will say, well, we'll limit it to this. No, for, you know, this design really, for the people we're working with, we really have a specific set of challenges. And I think in, you know, so it's not a persona in, you know, an age and a income bracket kind of thing, but a persona of a human in a context with a problem they're trying to solve, and, you know, how we may need to solve that for them. And the problem often isn't what the business is setting out to solve, if that makes sense. You know, they're setting out to solve the issue of, I want to communicate, you know, research resources we have available. They're not setting out to solve readability problems on the internet per se, right? But you have to go through one to get to the other.
Right. I like how you just said that. I was just going to say, it's sort of like the business problem is in the middle, and there's kind of this host of problems around it that we need to address before we can even think about what that middle problem is. Something you said earlier was really struck me. And that is that the way the organization thinks about itself is not the way a user thinks about the things that they need to do on the site. And I feel like this is true when, just to zero in on IA specifically, like the structures that we are designing, you know, if we were to present a structure to a user of what the organization looks like, they would be confused, right? It would be like, this doesn't match my mental model of what I expect this organization to be. And I think the converse is true as well. If we were to sort of take an ideal, let's call it menu design for a user and show that to the organization, and we've done this, they'd be like, what are you talking about? None of this, does not align with my mental model of how our organization works. Yes. Does that resonate with you?
Yes, and that's a really fun thing about the job, I think. It gets really interesting there, where, you know, you find people challenging their own assumptions on both sides. And sometimes that can go really well, and sometimes that can really blow up for people, depending on, I think, the stage of the business that you're working in. For example, I had a really great experience with a startup. I think they hadn't even gotten to market yet, but they were developing a product for pharmacists. And after being, you know, getting to observe pharmacists, working in a pharmacy, hearing their concerns and problems, you know, we came up with terminology to describe the problem from the perspective of the pharmacist, right? Which the business was kind of trying to solve part of that problem. I said, well, let's just expand the way we talk about it to include this other problem that they're having. And they were very amenable to that. They were ready to pivot. They changed their marketing materials. They were ready to go. And then I had an example of it kind of blowing up was working with a law firm on their intranet, and they had certain chunks of content. And I recall one of the chunks of content being cases. You know, to me, it seemed like, you know, the content that's here, it's going to include some summary of cases this firm has taken on. It was a dramatic, visceral response to no. Like, why are you even suggesting that level of transparency? What's your agenda for even trying, you know, maybe suggesting? It was
like Sarah was going in there trying to undermine their entire organization.
Yeah. And it's funny how I can be really powerful, you know, because I think it was really uncomfortable for them to say, we don't want that. We don't want to share, you know, we're competing with each other. We don't want to share. They never had to say they don't want to share until someone put an idea in front of them saying, here's how you can be transparent in your organization.
So normally I would expect a visceral reaction like that to be like, well, that word is unclear, right? Or you think of cases this way and I think of cases this way. But what you were doing there was sort of not on purpose, but you sort of accidentally stumbled upon, it sounds like, revealing these values or lack thereof in the organization.
Yes.
Do you have any other kind of examples? I'm looking for like labels that were unclear for folks, like, or that the users used in one way and the organization used in a different way. Does that ring a bell?
We have a real problem with the word reporting currently. I work, you know, for a financial regulator, and internally they think of reports often as products, like they've collected data and now they're sharing that data out. Whereas the customer thinks of reporting as I have to report this data to the regulator. So they're actually opposite processes, right? One, reporting can describe both data intake and data dissemination.
Right.
And yeah, it's a struggle to find where it's not the label and also the process, right? Like how do we make it clear where they're at in a process or where they're supposed to go?
Interesting. I love that example. It's one of those words that in some ways is so evocative, this idea of a report. I'm actually working on a project that has the word report in it right now. And when you start to tease it out, it actually means about a million different things. On the one hand, you want to be able to sort of say, okay, well, let's throw that word away and let's come up with some other words. But what might actually be useful is to say, okay, well, we know this word is report is ambiguous. So instead, we're going to start with that and then allow people to kind of explore within the structure, the different ways in which we're using it.
Right.
Kind of, is that a strategy that you've been using?
Well, I haven't found a replacement word.
No.
It's hard. And you could spend a lot of time and resources looking for one.
Right.
And I've tried to shore up the structures around it. So yes, like let people see within that context what we're talking about, and help them learn and lead them that way. Because the ambiguity is baked into that word, right? And I think that makes it a really powerful word to use. It can mean a lot of things. And I don't have an equivalent. So yes, like finding a way to not fight the label, but illuminate what it actually means through the context of, you know, the customer's kind of journey through that space we're creating.
Right? That's awesome. Kind of brings us to the lens that I thrust upon you. I apologize. We are at the bottom of the barrel. So I just grabbed whatever fish I could find. It's a bit of a smelly fish, but do you want to share with us what the lens is? And if you
overlap, useful overlap.
Yeah. Right? I feel like we were talking a little, this is sort of like, you know, the idea of reports deals with lots of useful overlap.
Right. How does the structure help users make sense of the overlap between categories? So, we're really decades beyond things existing in one space at a time, right? There's not, in the structures we're creating, digital structures, there's no thing that has to only exist in one space at a time. So I don't sweat the idea of something being repeated in another context. There's so much distraction and opportunity when a person's online and interacting with the product. I think the context really matters. And that's where I see the overlapping happening, right? Like if I'm in I'm trying to think of a project I'm working on now. We've been working on trying to make our various data sets more accessible. And we've come up with, you know, data in and of itself isn't a meaningful label, right? But knowing that this is the place where I can go to get, you know, content in a portable way that I can use to fuel my own research kind of makes sense, right? But clearly there's two categories needed there. There's kind of the format supporting an objective, and then the actual specialization, you know, so we have different products, equity products or fixed income products or so on, and which begins to help people understand not just what's available, but what they can ask for, right? How we structure it and how really what they can ask for, because it's a new product. And as a regulator, we have an obligation to make it available to people. And I don't know if that's a great example because I'm kind of drawing on what I've been working on.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love it. I mean, that's kind of the point or my aspiration for the lenses is to say, I'm working on this thing.
Right.
I need to look at it in lots of different ways.
Right.
Does it make sense for me to look at the label or the category of data
right.
as something that has lots of useful overlap, in it. Yes. And maybe it doesn't, or maybe it does, but it clearly triggered something interesting for you. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I see it as an intersection point with a lot of different categories. It can lead into our automation services. It can lead into specialized business areas or, topic specializations. And alone, it means nothing.
I think that is really profound. Not to overstate it, but alone, it means nothing. I mean, I'm on interview 48 now. And when you say that, it doesn't just apply to the label, but it applies in my mind to the practice of information architecture, right? I asked you initially sort of, well, what do you do when you're just sitting and thinking by yourself? And your immediate reaction was, well, I look at the conversations I had with everybody else, which I thought was really interesting. Like, I don't mean to make too big a deal out of this connection, but it sounds like there's this recognition that when we're doing IA work, as practitioners, we're connected to other people, just as the concepts we are working on are connected to other kinds of concepts.
Yes, it's challenging to try and help people see those and shore up those connections in a way that helps everybody, you know.
You've used the phrase shore up a couple times, and I love it. Can you talk to me a little bit about, in your mind, what that means?
Well, it's hard. I do a lot of research, and sometimes I feel like, before we started recording, I was saying I love these interviews because I feel like I'm out in the wild as a lone practitioner thinking in this kind of what comes off as odd way in an organization that's very focused on delivery, tangible delivery. And I'm out there loving problems. And I think that's what I mean by shore up, is helping. If we can start to see the same problem, we can solve it. But there's a lot of work to be done to see the right problem. And I'm doing the air quotes because, I obviously have strong opinions on the right problem. The right problem is one that will end up solving lots of ancillary problems, right? Like, for example, I think redoing how our user accounts are created would absolutely transform the user experience in every other product that we release, right? Because it's a core shared experience our customers have. But how to get different business groups and different decision makers involved in allocating resources for that, to be able to see the problem in the way my main mind's trained on seeing all these kind of tendrils that it goes out into. It takes a lot of work. And we, you can quickly go in and talk past each other and not really, shore up in that way what getting on the same page is.
That's great. So I've been asking everyone to sort of dispense your best advice. If you were mentoring a designer new to the field, maybe a designer that doesn't have as much experience thinking about IA, I hope as designers, we all love problems the way you say you're loving problems. But sometimes, as you say, it's kind of harder to see some of these things. What advice might you give to a designer like that in how to cultivate this mindset or perspective, or how to think in terms of even shoring up?
My greatest tool and advice is watch people use the product in their environment, if at all possible. If it's a Zoom and you want to see how they're navigating, that's fine. It's even better if you can actually kind of be in the room with them and see everything that's going on in their environment. I think it's it really can transform your perspective of the problem that you're solving, and in a way that won't that the business can't give you when they're hiring you, right? Because they haven't gone out and seen it from that direction, and then you can bring it back to the business and come up with kind of a richer perspective, which is part of that shoring up process. The diagrams, everybody is a visual person. Don't let yourself get pigeonholed into being just a person who does mock-ups, right? A mock-up is now you're really designing a solution instead of illuminating that problem to solve. I think we're all learning new and better ways to visualize problems. So I'd also say, you know, be okay with the ambiguity and the discomfort that comes up in doing this work. It's not you, it's kind of the nature of what we do, and embrace it as part of the fun of you know, practicing IA.
Sarah, that was fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me.
Sure. Thank you for having me.